One of the biggest productivity hurdles is losing your data. Your computer crashes, you haven't backed stuff up, you've been meaning to, but you just never got around to it. That's where CrashPlan comes in. CrashPlan has been around since 2001, and they're a pioneer provider of cloud-based data protection and recovery services, both to individuals and businesses. And I guess ultimately, you've got to ask yourself, how much are your ideas worth, especially when you lose them? Whether it's a business plan, your images, your spreadsheets, your audio files, any of the files you use to work or manage your home. They've got options for everyone from solo creators to growing businesses. CrashPlan works efficiently in the background while you work, encrypting and sending all your new or changed files to their secure cloud every 15 minutes. And then if something happens to your files, your hard drive crashes, your cat knocks over a cup of coffee onto your laptop, or you just accidentally delete a file, your files are just a click away. CrashPlan makes it simple to restore some or all of your data with unlimited version retention. CrashPlan is your ultimate rewind button. Don't let data disasters slow you down. CrashPlan has your back and keeps you moving. Go to crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year of CrashPlan. That's crashplan.com/beyond for 50% off your first year. Back up better with CrashPlan. Hello and welcome back to Beyond the To-Do List, a podcast about productivity. I'm Eric Fisher, your host, as we discuss the true goal of productivity, living a more meaningful life. This week, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Carl Hebenstreit. He's the author of the book, The How and Why, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram. And whether you're familiar with the Enneagram or you've never heard of it, we will quickly cover the basics of the Enneagram, but then move on up and in to how it can help with understanding ourselves and especially our coworkers. And we'll compare how the Enneagram's approach is different than other personality assessments like Myers-Briggs and DISC, which you're probably aware of, and how it helps us understand the motives behind our behaviors, but also how that deep insight can transform employee motivation and interaction in a corporate setting. We're going to also touch briefly on the significance of the three subtypes and how those affect communication preferences and interaction styles. And hopefully overall, this will help shed some light on why some of your team members approach things differently than you do. And if you're tired of that one-size-fits-all approach to motivation and productivity, this is going to give you a way to move forward, uniquely crafting an approach with this better understanding of human behavior and the underlying motivations in the workplace, no matter what that looks like for you. So I'm going to get out of the way and enjoy this conversation with Carl Hebenstreit. Well, this week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show Carl Hebenstreit. Carl, welcome to Beyond the To-Do List.
Thank you so much, Eric. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
I know that I've done in the past conversations or, you know, episodes that have involved or talked about the Enneagram. I was thrilled to see your new book, The How and the Why, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram. We've never talked about the Enneagram. I mean, we talked about it in terms of the basics of it, what it is, the nine types, all that kind of good stuff. We've also then had a follow-up where it was all about the productivity types of the nine types, which was awesome. And we've even done one with like mixing self-awareness and Enneagram, which I think was late last year or really early this year. I can't remember. But we'll list some of those up in the mix in the show notes. But what I want to focus on here is you and your business applicability of the Enneagram. I'm curious, what's your history and discovery mechanism or catalyst with the Enneagram specifically, and then how you thought, wait, let's apply that to the world of business.
Yeah, so I did not know anything about the Enneagram. I had not heard anything about it until probably 1999 or 2000. And up until that point, I was in human resources. So we were using all of the standard human resources applications that we had for team building and for helping people understand each other better and for conflict resolution. So we had Myers-Briggs back then and DISC. And that worked. You know, that's what the organizations were ready for, and that's what we were using, and people were getting some value out of that. And it ended at some point. It's a behavioral system. Those other systems are behavioral systems. So then I was sitting in a class in a PhD program that I was enrolled in, had nothing to do with the Enneagram. However, the professor of the class knew this woman, Helen Palmer, and she invited her to come in to our just one class. It wasn't even a semester long thing. It was just this one class of our semester long class. And she introduced the Enneagram system to us. And it just blew my mind because I looked at it, and to answer your question about applicability to business. So the PhD program is organizational psychology. And we were looking at motivators, what motivates employees and what motivates people, right? And how were we going to use psychology in organizations and business? And here was this tool, this system that helped you to understand, great, all those behaviors that you learned from DISC and Myers-Briggs and Hogan and all those other systems, fantastic. But what caused them? What was the driver behind those behaviors? What motivated those behaviors? And if you understand what motivates you, first of all, and then understand that other people may not be motivated by the same things that you're motivated by, all of a sudden, light bulbs go off, aha moments happen, and you realize, hold on a second, I am now able to work better with people because I know where they're coming from. They're not doing this to irk me or to try to sabotage me or something. They truly are coming at it from a totally different perspective. And that perspective is valid. What can I learn from that perspective to add it to my perspective? Because now it's additive. Now I can integrate 8 other perspectives that I don't normally go to and have a much better understanding of the whole situation, of any situation. So that's where the aha moment happened for me. And I realized, wow, imagine if people knew about this, if organizations knew about this, and not only used it for their leadership development and team building, but also to use the insights of that into their systems and create systems that actually do attract, retain, and motivate all of the employees that they need, all of the diversity of the employees that they need, because each person is coming at it from a diverse perspective, 1 of 9.
Now let's back up for a second. And I'm sure as you are talking to people and they find out about this mesh of using the Enneagram in the business world, especially for interpersonal relationships and motivation in coworkers and subordinates and leaders and everywhere in between.
Customers too. Yeah.
Yeah. They're saying to themselves, actually, they say to you, okay, hold up. But what is the Enneagram? What do you say to them? How do you explain it?
So I asked them if they've heard of it, obviously. If they're coming at me with what is the Enneagram, like they probably haven't. And then I asked them if they've heard of other tools like Myers-Briggs. And sometimes they have not, or they don't understand that the concepts that they know about extrovert versus introvert and all that were related to Myers-Briggs. But then when they land on that and say, oh yeah, I do know about that, I've heard of that, I tell them that the Enneagram is a system very much like these other systems that they've known about, but it goes a lot deeper. And it doesn't just help you to understand yourself from a behavior standpoint, which is what the other systems do. It actually dives deeper into the motivation, and it helps you to understand your own motivation type. So it's a motivation typing system. Even though the shortcut is to call it a personality system, it's really a motivation typing system. And it helps you to understand your own motivations, why you do what you do, and also helps you to understand other people and why they might do it from a different perspective. And ultimately, again, integrating all 9 perspectives together.
Got it. Now, I know that you say that those are personality type tests and systems, et cetera, and those have been used in business for years. The Enneagram, newer. Actually, it itself is not newer. It itself is actually way older than the rest, but it's newer in terms of its applicability or it actually being applied. I think you're saying, though, that in terms of the options that are out there, the Enneagram is a better option. Why do you say that?
So I believe it's a better option, and it really is really up to the person's readiness for what are they ready for. So if they're only ready for an entree into the world of differences of personality, and they just want something with 4 system of like a 4 different category system, maybe DISC is what they're ready for. Once they get that and understand that, maybe they'll go into Myers-Briggs and see the 16 different combinations. And when they got that and they understand that, then they might say, okay, that's all fine and dandy. And it explains some stuff, but it doesn't explain everything. I'm now ready for more. So when they are ready for more, when that readiness is there to say, what else is there that I can really do to help understand myself better and my teammates, my colleagues, my boss, my stakeholders, my customers, whatever better, then it's the entree that you can go in and you can help them introducing the Enneagram.
That makes sense. I think the biggest thing that you're saying is the others address personality types, but don't necessarily go into motivation, as you've been saying. The Enneagram starts there and then moves from there more outward and even integrates. I have found that, for example, one we haven't mentioned, Strength Finders, I have found that I knew about that first, did that first, and then revisited that after having done the Enneagram task and learning what type I am. And I'm a five. And I found that my strengths that I already had and then revisited by taking it again farther out of the window that you could retake it, my Strength Finders findings really meshed or matched my Enneagram type really well.
Right. And those are the Strength Finders are behaviors as well. So yeah, there are some behaviors that are associated and correlated with certain Enneagram types. And the reality is the type is the why. Why do you do what you do? So Simon Sinek, a long time ago, came up with the concept of start with why. So why do we do things? So if we start with why, that's the Enneagram. And then it's a combination of the how, why and how, and then you get to the what. So if you go start with why, then look at how, then get to the what. The what is the behaviors, but the why and the how are the motivations, and that's the Enneagram.
Makes sense. So I know we mentioned that the Enneagram's the oldest of all of them and is kind of ancient in a way. So obviously some people are like, well, if it's that old, how can we really like trust it? And I'd be like, actually, I just talked to somebody about persuasion and the art of persuasion, and he was drawing from Aristotle. So I'm like, I mean, he updated the Aristotle stuff. And so
everything old is new again. And there is a lot of wisdom in ancient wisdom, taking that ancient wisdom forward to apply to current situations. And we forget about it. We want to simplify things. We want to modernize things. We want to say, no, let's reinvent the wheel. But why reinvent the wheel? The wheel is there, right? Let's see how we can use this wheel in different settings, how we can learn from using it in different settings and applying it in different settings. And it is ancient. It is so ancient. We don't even know when it started, but we can see it throughout history. There was a book that was written about showing how Odysseus's travels, when Homer wrote the Odyssey, Odysseus's travels are actually the Enneagram lands visited in order. So you see the Enneagram in that work. You see it in Egyptian history. There's one Enneagram teacher that takes people to Egypt and goes to all the temples and the pyramids and shows where all the symbols and the Enneagram are actually in the pyramids and in the temples and shows how that all that comes to play. So it is out there. It is all over the world. It just was forgotten and lost and really originally used for developing more about your spirituality and connecting to your spirituality. And now, of course, we have ways of looking at it from, let's look at it from a more practical perspective of, you know, obviously here we're talking about business, but other practical perspectives, again, going on readiness. If people want to use it for spirituality, great. If people want to use it for just a personality assessment, great. If people want to use it for developing themselves, fantastic. And if you want to use it for developing your organization and your team, even better.
So let's jump into that. Let's start from maybe the individual who, I'm just going to make a generalization, the person that's in their cubicle or they're home alone at their remote work desk. There is benefit to them learning their type and applying it to themselves in and of itself. Let's start there, but then let's branch out into, oh, if I know what my coworkers or my teammates' types are, that's also a benefit.
And it's a benefit if they know what your type is and what your preferences are, right? So, for example, you lead with type five. You've revealed that. Thank you for doing so. So some of the implications of type fives are type fives don't want to be put on the spot. They want to be prepared. They want to not look foolish. They want all the information that's out there. So if you have coworkers who are type five, they lead with type five, you know that you need to give them a heads up on things. You know that you need to give them all the information up front so that they can be prepared for going to a meeting and then presenting their opinion that way. And if it's something new that comes up that they may not be comfortable with immediately giving their opinion because they need to study something more or want to see something else or something else is tangential and how that can play into it and get additional information, give them the opportunity to come back to you tomorrow or the next day with their opinion or their advice. So if you know that, that you're working with type fives, it's a lot more helpful than to say, oh, Eric didn't say anything in the meeting, so he doesn't care, or he's disengaged, or whatever other biases that they're using to interpret your behavior of not wanting to immediately provide an opinion or a perspective.
So yeah, it's beneficial for everybody to know, not just themselves, but know others, and full disclosure, transparent enough for others to know them, because it's a two-way street. It's, you know how to best work with them and give them what they need, and vice versa.
Right. And a lot of times, a lot of pushback that some people who are not quite ready yet, that the give is that they don't want to be boxed. Oh, I don't want to go take this assessment and be boxed. And the reality is, guess what? Your coworkers and your colleagues have already boxed you into something that may or may not be correct based on your behaviors, not based on what they know of your motivation. So if you want to address that, if you want to fix that, if you want to correct it, if you want to, first of all, see what they are thinking or they're seeing, and if you want to make sure that even if they are correct in their assessment of your, what's motivating you, to say, hold on a second, maybe I can adopt some of these other perspectives and not be as predictable, because some of these other perspectives may have a lot of value in them that I'm not accessing.
Yeah. And with that give and take, with that self-aware / communal self-awareness and information gathering / sharing, it reminds me of, I know you say that you'd rather go with the platinum rule instead of the golden rule. What does that mean?
So we've been taught the golden rule. Everyone has heard of the golden rule, and Macon pretty much recited as, do unto others the way that you'd have them do unto you. So treat others the way that you want to be treated. And that would work in a world where everyone was exactly the same. That would absolutely work in a world that was exactly the same. Everyone was exactly the same, where everyone came from the same background, had the same abilities, had the same history, had the same religion, had the same political affiliation, had the same values. So every single person would be exactly the same. And so they would want to be treated exactly the same way, right? Theoretically. We know that that's not the case. I mean, listen to the news, just travel, just like whatever. Look at social media. You know that's not the case. There's a lot of disruption and war and conflict and misunderstanding. And it really does stem from that learning, that treat others the way that you want to be treated, because that has an implication that the way you want to be treated is the best way, that you are better than everyone else, and that everyone should want to be treated the way that you want to be treated. And we know that's not true. So the platinum rule is treat others the way that they want to be treated. So really figuring out, hold on a second, they may want to be treated differently. Other people may want to be treated differently. They may have other preferences, other likes, other dislikes, other ideologies, other values, other needs, whatever it is. So we need to figure out how they want to be treated. We need to get that additional data point of reaching out to them, forming a relationship, showing that we care, having empathy for their perspective, and understand where they're coming from and why they're coming from that perspective. And guess what? There's probably some value in adopting that into our own. We will learn something from that. We can actually take it a step further and go to the rhodium rule, which is that integration part. So the platinum rule is treat others the way they want to be treated. And the rhodium rule is, what are you learning from that? How can you add that into your own learning, your own development, your own insights, your own perspectives? How can you grow your perspectives so that you're not only looking at it from that one lens?
If you enjoy Beyond the To-Do List, I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans. I'm Sarah Hart Unger, the host of Best Laid Plans, a podcast devoted to all things planning and planning adjacent. I talk about everything from paper planner reviews to deep dives into all things productivity, from keeping track of goals and tasks to fitting in your true priorities and reducing the stress around planning and organizing across different areas of life. I am a practicing physician and mother of three, so I have a lot going on in my own life and am intimately familiar with the time constraints that impact us all. And I love sharing my own productivity strategies and learning from others who have their own ideas to share. I invite you to check out Best Laid Plans, available on all podcast platforms, or visit my website, theshoebox.com, theshubox.com, to learn more.
I think that as we're talking about how somebody else wants to be treated, it reminds me of another it's not necessarily a personality or a motivation type, but it kind of fits in there in a corner. The five love languages, you may have heard of that before. A lot of people have heard of that. And it makes me think of the fact that, you know, if I can do a quick synopsis, it's basically there are five. I'm not going to name all five, but basically it's the way you show appreciation, care, love, as it is in what it's titled or called as, and that you do them in the way that you want them. But at the same time, other people, so for example, someone like my wife is all about gifts. I'm horrible at gifts, but then I have to improve and do gifts well for her sake. And I could give a crap about gifts, but I have to let her do the gifts all the time in small to large quantities, frequencies, etc. And that's something you have to learn. And so that's kind of a more simplified version, in a sense, of what I'm hearing you say.
It's exactly it. It's treating others the way they want to be treated. And if you're treating others the way that you want to be treated, according to your own needs for your own love language needs, and they're not matching that, if they match your stack, that's great. Then you don't have to worry about it. But not everyone's going to do that.
Yeah. And it's rare that we're going to find, well, let me put it this way. It's highly unlikely you're going to be friends or colleagues, et cetera, with people that are exactly the same type or love language or personality type, et cetera, which is why it's all about finding out what they are and what you are so that you can swap cards and say, here's a bit more about me and I'll learn about you. And then we can both get what we want, especially get what we need. And then we can all work together better.
Yeah, Eric, what I'm hearing you say is you're starting to quote the Spice Girls. Tell me what you want, what you really will want.
Yes, that is exactly right.
Wisdom of the Spice Girls.
Oh, gosh. So I imagine that by this coming into play, and I'm sure that this is probably, there's some certain amounts of friction as you talk to people in businesses and organizations about this, especially when it comes to communications. How does the Enneagram in business play out in improving our communications?
So people are looking for different things and have different styles of communication in doing so. So we haven't really talked about the nine different styles, but we do have some that are part of the assertive triad, which is the 3s, 7s, and 8s. And they are very much about high level, quick communication. What is that I need to know? Just give me little bullet points. Give me whatever I need. If I need to go dive deeper, I will, but I'm not ready for that right now. Let's start high level so I know what action needs to be taken, what needs to be done. And they're looking for different things. So each of the different styles, when they're receiving a communication, are going to be focused on different parts of it. For example, if you're communicating, having a difficult communication around layoffs or downsizings or reorganizations or restructures or changing of strategy or whatever it is, different people are going to be looking at it from different perspectives, but their own motivational needs. So really quickly, the type ones are going to be looking at it from the perspective of fairness. What's the right thing to do in this situation? They're going to look at it from their values, the ethics, the morality. What's going on here? Are people being treated ethically and according to their ethics? Am I being treated ethically according to my ethics, my values? So the type twos are going to be looking at the connections. What's going on with the connections and the relationships and the stakeholders and the customers? You know, how are people being treated from that perspective? The type threes are going to be looking at it from, what's the goal here? What, how does this affect my brand, my position, my title? Is this an opportunity for me to advance? I get a better job, right? What's going on there according to the goals and the brand and my image? The type fours are going to be looking at it from a uniqueness perspective, a creative perspective, an authentic perspective, a special perspective. How do they maintain their uniqueness in this new setting? Is that going to be affected? The type fives are more likely going to be looking at it from the objective lens of what's going on here. What's the evidence? What's the data? Does this make sense? Is this logic? Should this be done? Is there something else that we need to take into account? And that's where the type six also comes into worst case scenario planning of, okay, worst case scenario planning. I'm going to get laid off. I'm going to be affected. What do I do to be safe? Where's my tribe in this? How do they keep me safe? How do I stay comfortable, safe, and secure? Type sevens are going to be looking at it from, what's the opportunity? What more can I do? What exciting new network can I be part of? You know, what else can be done? How can we expand this? And type eights are going to be looking at it from, how much power, control, and authority are they going to keep or lose in this situation? How is it going to affect their direct reports? How can they keep them safe? And then type nines are going to be looking at it from a perspective of, wow, this has changed. This is painful. There's conflict that's going to emerge out of this. How do we get this over with as quickly as possible? How do we ruffle the fewest feathers? How do we keep the peace? How do we get back to that peaceful, tranquil state if there ever can be one? So different people are going to be looking for different things and different reassurances in communications. And there will be a style that's associated with it. So that, like, as we said earlier, the threes, the sevens, and the eights are going to be much more open about their needs and upfront about them and more explicit about them. Others are not going to be as explicit. Some of them are going to don't want to rock the boat, right? So they're going to be sit back and just wait and see. The fours and the fives and nines are going to be in that category of like, that's just, I wonder what's going to happen. Let's watch. And then our ones and twos and sixes are going to approach it from a much more, well, there's a process. We have trust and faith in it. It's been done before. It's just going to follow through. Let's just follow the process and everything will be okay. So it's different ways of receiving the information, engaging in it, and what they're looking for. If we can create communications that address all nine of those points, we know that we're going to hit every single person's need in that situation.
I think everybody listening can place themselves either in one of those three groups, or they know people in the other two, and they can say, oh, I've seen them do that, or that's why he does this, or I'm that one. And they can kind of slot themselves in again, not to put yourself or put others in a box, but I mean, that's kind of already happening anyway. This is more getting outside of that box.
Right. And I think it's a lot easier for people, instead of landing on one, I have to be this one type. The realization is that we are all nine types. We have all nine energies and drivers within us. Some of them are higher than others. One of them is the highest. And to land on that, it may be even simpler for people to look at it from the perspective of thinking styles, feeling styles, and action styles, because that's how we separate the Enneagram model into those three centers, those body centers. So if we look at it from a feeling perspective, our feeling types are our twos, threes, and fours. The twos are all about really pushing down their own needs and trying to meet other people's needs in order to be liked. Right? And they're very intuitive about knowing what other people need. The threes are usually pushing down their own needs because they want to accomplish goals. So they're always going to be looking at the goal and accomplishing that goal. And the fours are looking at feeling all the feelings, their own feelings, other people's feelings, having true empathy. So there's which one of those three feeling styles do you relate to most, right? So that's probably one of your feeling style. For you, as you've revealed, your core type is in the thinking center, five, six, and seven. Five is the objective thinker. Six is the loyal skeptic. So it's all about worst case scenario planning. And seven is the opposite of the six. It's all about best case scenario planning. It's all about what options, what opportunities, what exciting adventures can we take with this? Does this open us up to and up for? And then the action styles are the eight, nine, and one. And the eight being immediate action taken, usually through others, delegation and execution. Nine is put the brakes on. Let's wait and see what happens and then take action. Because again, action is going to cause conflict and we don't want to cause conflict. And the ones are, what's the right thing to do in this situation? Let's look at our values, our morals, our principles, our North Star, our true North, or whatever it is, and then take action according to that. So if you can pick your highest preference in each one of those three centers, you will understand immediately why you do what you do and how you think about what you do and why the actions that you're taking and the way that you're taking those actions. And then you can start seeing how different people are doing maybe the other two styles in each of those different centers and how that might be different from yours and why you might think that they're, you know, not as good as you or out to get you or whatever it is that we're doing from our standpoint of our psychological biases.
And then there's also an additional layer to all of this in terms of the way that we interact because of recently past 4 or 5 years now, we've had this remote work versus office work or hybrid, that extra layer of technology and how we're communicating methodology wise or modality wise, I should say, adds a whole other kind of complexity.
Yeah, it is a complexity. Yes. So understanding that even more, getting to have that deeper understanding of our coworkers and them of our preferences and motivations is a huge help in really having those effective interpersonal dynamics. Yeah.
I mean, I know that we talked about, you know, those three different styles there that the nine types when you have the high priority in certain ones. When we got all these different channels, we've got Zoom meetings, we've got Google Meet, those are all the same. And then, you know, the video meetings. And then we've got, you know, we've got email, we've got Slack, we've got phone calls that are voice without video, we've got texting. When it comes to all those different channels, how does that intermesh with the way that those three different kind of styles engage better or best?
This might actually depend more on your quote unquote subtype. So subtype is how you interact with others. And that really helps flavor the way that your core motivation shows up. But the subtypes are one-to-one, they are social, and they are self-preservation. So those are the three subtypes. So if you think about those subtypes, it's or instincts, actually, they're called instincts. When you combine them with a core type, it creates the subtype, and there are 27, 9 times 3, 27 different possibilities. So these instincts are how probably going to be higher, more highly correlated to how you want to interact with others. So someone who's self-preservation probably isn't going to want to have as much video or FaceTime. They might do better through texts or emails, right? If that's their first in their stacking, their highest in their stacking. And we have all three of them. Two of them we can probably go back and forth with comfortably, and one is our blind spot. So self-preservation is, again, probably going to be more about text me or email me, but don't call me unless, you know, the world is coming to an end. And definitely don't video me. So the one-to-one is going to want to have more of that direct, intense eye contact. So they're going to prefer in person, number one. And then secondarily, it'll be that live face-to-face, maybe a Zoom or even calling. So you can hear the intonations, know exactly where you're coming from, be able to match the person. So that's that one-to-one instinct. And then the social instinct is all about picking up cues from a group. So they would want to be able to see like what's going on in the group. I want to read the room. I want to pick up these hints, these like see what's going on with power dynamics and everything like that. So they may not be able to see that as well in a text or in an email, but they'll probably want to be in a room to see that or in a video to be able to see that as well. So that's where those will come into play, regardless of your core type.
Got it. And that's good to note, because a lot of times we get to talking about the Enneagram and we get to dive in on the 9 types, but we don't go into subtypes and we don't kind of parse it out a little bit more. And I think that can be a sticking point for some people where they're like, well, I'm a 9, but like not really, or I'm this, but I'm like, and again, the ranking, the percentage, the, you know, which one's the overwhelming, like biggest percentage of you. And again, people are hearing this and they're like, oh, this seems way more complicated. It's not. It's not really. Not if you start at a basic level and understand a certain amount and then add a little more and then add a little more. It adds nuance, in other words, much like if you've already done other types of tests, etc. It's an integrating layer.
It is. And guess what? The Enneagram community has gone through that same understanding as well. It's an evolving understanding and evolving process. It originally, when the Enneagram was first starting its, you know, debut, I should say, in the Western world in probably the 70s and 80s. And now it's taken off, of course, and more people understand it and see it and have heard of it. But back then, everything was about your core type. Oh, I'm a this wing that, you know, whatever was next to you. Like, for example, for type 5, 5 wing 6 or 5 wing 4. And then we realized, no, you have both wings. That doesn't explain the differences between certain vibes. Oh, guess what? There are instincts. That's starting to explain differences between certain vibes. Why does the social 5 look different from a self-preservation 5, right? From a one-on-one 5. So all these nuances and understandings have taken time, and everything isn't understood all up front. So take your time with it.
Yeah, there's no rush here.
There's no end for it. Constant evolution, constant development.
Yes, yes. So, and I think, again, the thing that I think is the most beneficial here, not just if you're somebody trying to lead change in an organization towards using this and applying this, but also say somebody else is doing that and you're first now hearing about it and you're like, oh boy, they're going to apply this thing to us. We're going to all have to take this test and all this kind of stuff. We've heard that before. Many of us, we've been in that position before. I think maybe to allay their fears a little bit, what are some of the ways that employees who hear this is coming to them in their place of business, how is it going to help them in terms of like employee engagement? because I know that's something that we've all felt like, oh, I'm just another person here. This actually is going to improve your standing's not the right word, but just your
experience,
your belongingness, and you're going to be known, I guess, in a better way.
So I don't think that's necessarily a logical argument. People won't receive that logically. They will only start seeing or experiencing it or believing it when they see their colleague, their coworkers, their leaders actually using it in a way that is benefiting the employees. And they're starting to see employees being treated differently, still equitably, but differently, and receiving what they want. And then ultimately, that should be reflected in the company's annual or every 2 years, whenever they do their employee engagement or employee satisfaction surveys. That should be play out there. And you're going to see it in the behaviors, the changing of the behaviors and the inclusivity of everyone. So people will start to have a more psychologically safe environment where they feel like they can present their different perspective and opinion without it being discounted or pushed away.
Yeah, I think that's key. What's funny is I was bringing it up in a very logical way, like a five. And then I realized, wait, yes, the experiencing of it is really going to be a big conveyor of its value for many, if not most. So
from a logical perspective, when you have the data of the employee engagement survey scores, but that's going to take time.
Yeah, it's definitely going to take some time. One, you've got this book, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram, and the how and the why, I should say. I love that you see, now I'm remembering that we talked about that, the how, the why, and what was the other one? Not the who.
The what? Ending with the what?
Yeah, the who is a band. I love that it's about that. I think that's, again, that's me and my logical mind grasping onto, oh, it's the this and the this and the this. And it's like, anyway, all that to say, I think this is something that's going to make a huge impact for a lot of people. I think this conversation, as well as maybe some other wading into the water type information that you've got, I'd love to point people to where they can find out more, one, about the book, and two, about the work that you're doing, and dip their toes in, get more comfortable with it.
Thank you, Eric. So the easiest way is my website, which is Perform and Function, kind of like a play on form and function, but it's performandfunction.com. LinkedIn is a great way to keep in touch. R. Carl Hebenstreit on that. So it's Carl with a K, R-K-A-R-L, and Hebenstreit on LinkedIn. And the books are available on Amazon. There's the business book, which is now it's in third edition, The How and Why, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram. There's also, if you're not ready for the business book and you want a little bit more of a crash course in the Enneagram, there's a children's book, which is really a great way to introduce someone to the Enneagram, which is called Nina and the Really, Really Tough Decision. And that's available in English and Spanish and Greek, and it's being translated into French.
Amazing.
And teaser alert. There's a new book coming out called Explicit Expectations. So be on the lookout for that, which has a little bit of the Enneagram in it, but it's also, again, if you're not ready for putting the Enneagram in business, Explicit Expectations is the first step. And then you can add the Enneagram right after you do the Explicit Expectations. Although I will tell you, there is a really cool takeaway from that book, which is totally Enneagram based, to help people understand the differences between them as a manager and each of their direct reports, and to actually explicitly call it out on a document so people know, oh, when this person is thinking, they're coming at it from this perspective. When they're feeling, this is how it's going to be shown. When they're taking action, this is what's going to be likely to happen and why. And if you understand that about yourself and each of your direct reports, and they understand it about you, that's going to help create a much better and much more effective business relationship and results.
Nice. Awesome. Well, we're going to link up to all those things in the show notes for this episode. And Carl, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for sharing and enlightening us on the Enneagram.
It's my pleasure, and we are all empowered to enlighten ourselves using that Enneagram system. Yes.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your listening to-do list. I hope that you found this episode helpful. I know that I enjoyed talking about the Enneagram any chance I get. Make sure to jump into the show notes where you can find the link to Carl's book, The How and the Why, Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram. That's also where you can find my list of productivity tools. They're not all podcast tools. And my list of top productivity books. I'm curious to see which ones you've already read and which ones you pick up next. If you found this episode helpful, and I hope you did,
consider sharing this episode right now while you're finishing it out. Hit that share button in your podcast player app of choice, wherever you're listening to this, or again, over on the show notes at beyondthetodolist.com. Share it on social, share it with your team, maybe grab the book and do it together, go through it together and improve your team. Thank you so much for sharing. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next episode.